This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. My guest today is Wyatt Cash, editor-in-chief of Government Computer News and Defense Systems for 1105 Government Media. Wyatt, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, Mark.
It's been a long time coming, man. I keep thinking back to that first dinner we had, and it's been a while. You've been here for how long now?
5.5 years, and wow. It's been quite a learning curve. On the other hand, it's been a great chance to really observe how much government's doing in technology that a lot of the public doesn't really appreciate.
It's that part is not transparent.
Well, it's more transparent than it used to be, and yeah. Certainly some of the social media things that we're seeing, mm-hmm. Which makes more of what the government's doing available to the public, certainly facilitating that. But I think the public still has a learning curve to appreciate what's there. I think many people don't really still get the fact that they can access lots of information in much more powerful ways than they used to. But I give the government good marks for enabling more than was the case just a couple mm-hmm. of years ago. And I think doing a better job of getting the word out and engaging the public so they get exposed. And I think like a lot of technology, we're all kind of learning how we can use it more effectively.
Right. And we saw each other the other day down at the Knowledge Management Open Government event at the Hyatt. And one of the people on my panel was from Veterans Administration talking about all of the services that they're now providing veterans, and almost all of it's online. So that's pretty cool. So having the constituent audience that knows where your stuff is the traction part here. But let's talk first about the you've got a story recently about the top 10 technologies for 2010. Let's run through those and see what's hot.
Yeah, we published this a little while ago, and it was a look at what technologies were likely going to impact strategic planning of agencies this year. That is, there are real technologies that are either here or almost here and are likely to represent new ways of getting things done or more effective or more cost-effective ways of doing it. So the list in no particular order is part infrastructure and part software. Probably the big changes is the next jump in speeds. We're going to see 100 gigabyte per second networking on the horizon and 10 gigabit Ethernets, and the 10 gigabit is really about 10 times faster than what a lot of networks are using currently. A lot of people are starting to get access to that, and I think we all find that the more we use this, the more speed we need to get bigger jobs done.
Well, I still remember dial-up, and
can you imagine doing dial-up anymore today?
You'd shoot yourself.
Well, I just got my mother off dial-up a little while ago, and she, still kind of is in awe of what you can do these days. And I go, this is so slow. So I'm looking for faster speeds. And if you go over to Singapore and some of the Asian markets, and particularly in their mobile area, I mean, they're used to dramatically faster speeds. So that's part of the reason why there's such a push for a lot of this, not just broadband to every home, but faster broadband to be able to empower Americans to do more at work and at home.
Mm-hmm. That would certainly empower telework.
It would. So we have those. Web 2.0, last year we spent a lot of time covering how we were fumbling along in business and in government in trying to get our arms around, should this be in the workplace? How do you make it productive in the workplace? And as we came into 2010, it really became evident that we've moved very rapidly in making this a cornerstone at work as productivity tools. And though even to the extent a lot of managers are not comfortable with it yet, there's a lot of implications of how do you control it. There's security concerns. At the end of the day, I think what's remarkable is the willingness to experiment, and we're seeing a tremendous range of examples on that.
We don't normally think of the government as an agent of change. You know, it's really slow to adapt and to adopt. So.
Well, and I, you know, can speak, you know, I think a lot of businesses also aren't as quick to embrace unless there's a profit-making model.
Right.
In government, it's a little harder to put the return on investment on why does social media help. But with the new administration putting a big emphasis on open government and transparency, and most importantly, the desire to interact with the citizenry, these tools not only enable that, but they're generally very low cost. In many cases, a lot of the experimentation that's going on is through web-based tools that don't really cost anything other than experimentation time. The big stumbling block coming into the year, which has largely been resolved, is the user license agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So if I sign on to YouTube as an employee at, let's say, GSA, you know, that little screen comes up and says, do you agree to our terms? And, of course, as a government employee, you couldn't agree to that and do government work under the terms that were there. So GSA did, I think, a really excellent job over the last few months, and a lot of people there, including some support from the White House, to say, let's rework these user agreements so that it doesn't preclude us from a couple things and also respects that we're a government entity and we can't agree to these, but we still want to use them. So I think there's something like 25 social media services, Facebook and MySpace and YouTube and Flickr and many of the other more popular ones.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really that legal agreement still needs to be reviewed by agencies' attorneys and their general counsel, but by and large, it's no longer the obstacle that it once was. And we've seen just an explosion, really, of government agency sites being able to deploy social media tools, and that's really been very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, so Web 2.0 involves things like blogging and podcasting. We saw early on, you know, the sort of slow and then more rapid adoption of the blogging tool.
That's right.
And
I think you see some really high-profile people doing it now, most notably is Admiral Mullen has a Facebook page that is updated remarkably frequently. I'm sure he gets some help. But,
I bet.
You know, I think what's interesting that a lot of people don't realize is the commitment at the top of the military, for example, most notably with General Cartwright, who's really embraced this idea that connecting people who know the information is often more important to getting the right information into the people's hands, the warfighters' hands, than the traditional hierarchy of command, which has its place, but is slow and often doesn't get the best information in time. So he's really been out in the forefront from the top of the Joint Staff, and Admiral Mullen setting his example of communicating outward as a leading example of how military and government leaders can leverage these kinds of tools. And there's many blogs out there now from high-level government executives and CIOs and CFOs and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all been in the works for a while. I mean, if you look back the last couple of years, there's been a lot of experimentation. But this year, not only are we seeing more of it, but we are also enabling more of it in government.
Yeah, and we also see the weekly presidential address now no longer first broadcast on radio. It's like a podcast.
That's so. Right. And you know, I think the Obama administration obviously brought in a great sort of awareness and orientation to using these tools. But I think we have to be reminded that a lot of these tools really weren't ready for prime time until just the last couple of years. So you really have a convergence. Part of it's a mindset from the government.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it's a technology play that has mushroomed. And I think what's connected the two are, again, folks at GSA that sort of says, okay, how do we bring these tools in manage them, and even recognizing that we're losing a little control over the message in some cases, the improvement of getting the message out, connecting people, engaging them, all have such clear benefits that there's not a reason to wait till we get it perfect. And I think that's a real watershed in the years that we've been covering government technology, because you really have tools from outside the domain of the IT shop sort of coming in almost over the transom.
Right.
And it's really kind of presented some fresh challenges and some good challenges for the CIOs and CTOs of these agencies to figure out how do we make this work and still make it work securely, because there's no question security has also become a huge issue, as we know.
It's the biggie. Hold that thought. My guest is Wyatt Cash. Wyatt is the Editor-in-Chief of Government Computer News and Defense Technology.
Defense Systems, right?
Defense Systems, I'm sorry. And when we come back, we're going to pursue the rest of the top 10 technologies to watch. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arinc.
A number of journalists will no longer be able to go into the military commissions at Guantanamo Bay. The Pentagon says four of them published the name of a witness after being told not to. The military wanted the witness identified only as interrogator number one, and said that reporting his name was off limits. Reporters for the Miami Herald, Toronto Star, Globe and Mail, and Ken West News Service are the organizations affected. I'm J.J. Green.
When you're flying somewhere, you ever think about the amount of information that is needed to get you to your destination? Arinc does every day. Arinc enables airlines to send and receive vitally important operational information. So the next time you hear the flight crew advise that you'll be landing in 20 minutes, you're 30 miles from the airport. You'll be arriving at gate B26, and the weather is fine. Remember, this information travels to you over one of the world's largest private networks, Arinc's. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
Save money at HalfPriceDC.com with half-price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, stores, spas, and more. This week, HalfPriceDC.com has half-price gift certificates to Morty's Deli, mouth-watering pastrami, potato pancakes, and DC's best matzo ball soup, Morty's of Washington Tradition, Aquarius Salon, where it's always happy hour at their color bar with complimentary Wi-Fi and cable TV for busy moms and businesswomen of Potomac, and Laser Plus Laser Trolysis and Skincare in Vienna, Northern Virginia's premier laser hair removal, electrolysis, and skincare center. See all the offers at halfpricedc.com.
The U.S. Army is one place where PC durability is critical, and HP delivers. HP computers go the distance, from hard drive protection to rigorous testing. For durability you can trust, HP offers reliable notebooks, desktops, and workstations at special ADMC2 prices. See the full range of HP solutions now at hp.com/HP for Army. HP computers feature the reliability and intelligent performance of the all-new 2010 Intel Core processor family.
Here's Jim Sweeney, manager, virtualization consulting practice at GTSI on Virtually There, the federal view of virtualization, present and future, sponsored by GTSI and Oracle.
Where you really gain with virtualization is the flexibility to move a virtual workload, an operating system and an application, one physical machine to another, as you need to increase the overall performance of the environment.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Looking to cut your data center cost while maintaining your level of service? With a virtualization solution from GTSI and Oracle, your IT becomes more efficient. Application deployment is accelerated, services are more predictable, and upfront planning results in increased long-term savings. GTSI, one mission, yours. For more information, visit gtsi.com.
Usable news and information for your job. Go in-depth with Francis Rose, 1 to 3, every weekday afternoon on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Wyatt Cash of Government Computer News and Defense Systems, and we are talking about the top 10 technologies to watch in 2010. Where do we leave off?
Right, so we talked about 100 gigabyte networks and also 10 gigabyte Ethernets. But Web 2.0 technology being a big factor for this year. Next on our list is the fourth generation wireless technologies. And a lot of us that look at our phones see if we've got the 3G signal coming in. 4G promises to bring a tenfold increase in the wireless capacity of carriers. And we're already seen the first installation of commercially available 4G in Scandinavia, mm-hmm. released in late last November. The technologies are working and available. To some degree, it does represent the need to upgrade towers and processing. But at the end of the day, it really fully utilizes the power of internet protocol in carrying these messages. It reduces some of the awkward hops that happen between phone and tower, tower to main station, relaying across the country and then to another tower and then to another wireless device. It can streamline this and carry much more capacity. And the big difference now is it means less dropped calls, but more importantly, less dropped data. Because this year was significant in that more data was transmitted over wireless than voice. And that was just expected, but it makes a big difference as the degree to which people are expecting the ability to transfer data, which is all kinds of data, video, voice as well, but more importantly, sensor information. So you have buoys in the oceans, right, sending wireless signals, being able to gather that, process it. So huge additional ability to take in, process, and use information.
Now, are there added security issues when you move up to 4G?
In many cases, a lot of those become simpler to manage because you're really have much
more
control.
You don't hear that often enough.
Yeah, and I think big interesting debate on 4G, which is was kind of as a contrasting or competitive technology to WiMAX, which was sort of a wide area wireless like you get at Starbucks, and they have a technology called LTE. And briefly, without getting into the weeds, it does make it much more manageable, and most of the telecom carriers have all decided to get behind this standard. So once the industry side has sort of said this is the way we'll go, that'll accelerate investment. So we should expect to see quite a bit of that really moving into the market this year. And I think for agencies, the message is, and for contractors as well, is if it's not in their strategies, as I assume it is, it certainly needs to be in terms of capability. And how does that change the business processes that the agency customer groups will need to look at?
And through which is this going to be a network? Kind of
that's thing, our understanding. Or, yeah. Probably would be available through networks, through the carriers, and it's still to be determined on how that'll evolve.
Yeah.
So our fifth one was USB 3. We all seem to be pretty familiar with plugging in a USB device, and USB 3 simply is the next generation of it. It does require a slightly different port attachment. So you won't see a USB 3B on many laptops yet, but you will soon. And the important message on that is that'll also make it much faster to move data back and forth. I think a good example is if you were to download a 25 gigabyte high definition movie under USB 2, it'd take about 15 minutes. Under USB 3, it'll take about a minute. So the ability to just, and as we know, we're using more and more data in much bigger volumes, so that'll be an important device as well. Next on our list was just the degree to which IPv6 is moving into center stage. As most of your audience probably knows, that's the next generation of internet protocol, right, addresses, and the old IPv4 standard is essentially running out of available addresses. IPv6 addresses that, but more.
You mean the collection I have of 200 government-related URLs is now becoming more valuable?
Well, I think the URLs will still work, but what we will see is so many more devices are going over the internet.
Yeah.
Sensors I mentioned earlier, and so the internet being a transport for collecting data of all kinds of things, and really IPv6 will enable an internet of things. I think we're used to sort of people connecting with people or websites,
right?
But there's a lot of other devices that if you can get data into a center central processing system, you can do a better job predicting weather, water currents, navigation, where's my inventory, and so forth. So that's moving more squarely into the mainstream, although I think the U.S. government's still not moving along fast enough on that, frankly. It's been mandated, and they've done the minimums, but you really see Asia and others that didn't have as much IPv4 and had to go with IPv6 really start to figure out how do we not only take advantage of all these addresses and their ability, but really move to build on those and learn new processes with that.
Cool.
So next, just to round out our list, probably a virtualization moving to the desktop. We hear a lot about that. The idea that you take a machine in a physical sense and have it operate in a sort of virtual sense, being able to take servers that often are only used about 5% of the time and be able to store a number of computers virtually on them so that they're used much more fully. But more fundamentally, the desktop is at a point now where I think instead of sort of as we get used to computing over the web with Gmail and Google Maps, it really begins to beg the question, do we really need all those hard drives on our desktop? Can't we just virtualize our environment on a remote server? And that allows agencies to better centrally manage it for security, the latest software checks. If there's a big bug discovered in somebody's software, you can sort of master engineer those corrections instead of having to run around to every desktop and make sure it's up to date and so forth. So we see a lot that's going to make that a much more advantage of
workers. I assume that would make the computer security and network security controls also easier.
It should be easier. They become more complex in new ways because virtualization has different levels of demand.
But each individual user is less likely to infect their own machine or the network as a result.
That's right. And, you know, there's ways that if you turn on your computer in the morning that this would essentially look for a pure picture of what your computer should look like in its configuration. Mm-hmm. So even if something happened during the day, you can start tomorrow with sort of a fresh set of drivers, if you will. And so I think what that will mean is that IT staffs can focus on other problems that are becoming more pressing and spend less time in the maintenance. And it also means lower costs. We hear a lot about netbooks, you know, where you don't really have a lot of, you know, real storage and processing power because you don't really need it. All you really need to do is get onto a remote server someplace or over the internet through the cloud and essentially do your computing that way. And
so Larry Ellison was right 7 years ago.
I would say that's right.
Just a little early again.
So the last couple areas have to do with sort of things related to the internet. One is called domain name security. Domain name system security. These are these sort of hubs that store the addresses of websites and do sort of the master redirecting on the internet. Mm-hmm. But there've been a lot of security issues on that, and I won't go in the weeds on that. But a number of serious vulnerabilities that have cropped up in the servers that redirect and could falsely redirect a request for traffic.
Yeah.
And kind of concurrent with that is another technology that's getting a lot of attention, has been for a while, but we'll see more of it, and that's deep packet inspection. And that's one of the biggest things, and we hear a lot about FISMA, the Federal Information Security Management Act, generally having been stuck in a realm where every 3 years you have to really audit your networks. And everyone has agreed that what we need today is continuous monitoring. And, in fact, a lot of the movement on the Hill certainly from CIO Vivek Kundra has been a push to make continuous monitoring of traffic in and out a cornerstone of how we make networks more secure. So deep packet inspection gets in at looking at what tools are available to analyze the traffic and look for variations that suggest malware or other abuses. Right now, it's still at a point where they can say, this is the bad thing that just went by our inspection.
Yeah.
What we're really trying to do is not only see it, but stop it in its tracks. And we still have a ways to go before we get there.
Cool. My guest today is Wyatt Cash. Wyatt is the editor-in-chief of both Government Computer News and Defense Systems Magazine. When we come back, we're migrating from the top 10 technologies to watch in 2010 to some of the top stories in 2010. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Internet. It's indispensable. Without it, how else would we perform crucial functions like shoe shopping, watching videos of a cat playing the piano, emailing inspirational anecdotes to our 1,000 closest friends? But despite these awesome utilizations of information technology, at Kaiser Permanente, we've found some better uses. Like being able to securely manage your own health online 24/7, emailing your doctor's office, checking most test results, reviewing meds, making routine appointments. Not to mention a vital digital connection between you, your doctor, and everyone on your team. Could it be that making total health smarter, more efficient, and more convenient is the very sort of thing for which the Internet was intended? Maybe. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't fit in a cat video now and then. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we want you to live well, laugh well, and thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
A scary new cybersecurity development took place that got the attention of the government all the way to the White House. Here's Rodney Jaffe of Neustar.
For a period of about 17 minutes, about 10% of the Internet routes, or about 38,000 of them, were leaked by China Telecom. And these were networks that included almost all major corporations in the world, as well as every government. Traffic actually went into China and came back out.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
The Intelligence and National Security Report is brought to you by ManTech International Corporation.
ManTech has been providing IT services and solutions to the Air Force for more than 25 years, and they intend to deliver innovative and worldwide support to the upcoming NetSense 2 contract. They provide a full spectrum of net-centric services, including service-oriented architecture enterprise solutions, web service development, cybersecurity, network operations, and sustainment support. ManTech has been named one of the top 100 IT companies in the world by Business Week magazine.
Due to the high demand for ManTech's skills and expertise, they have tremendous career opportunities for cleared, highly skilled IT professionals, security experts, intelligence analysts, engineers, and technicians. Apply for openings today at ManTech.com. That's ManTech.com. ManTech, leading the convergence of national security and technology.
Have Federal News Radio headlines delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Wyatt Cash, who is the editor-in-chief of Defense Systems and Government Computer News. Wyatt, The top 10 techs are important, but the top stories to watch this year are somewhat different and may involve some of the same.
Well, that's right, and I think we're seeing a lot of encouraging developments on that front. The technologies we discussed, which we've highlighted in our January issue, if people want to get more details on that. Those are coming.
And you can find all these stories, by the way, on GCN.com.
That's right.
And DefenseSystems.com. And if you go to any of the 1105 websites, FCW, Washington Technology, it'll say our other publications. You click on that button, and there's a drop down, and you can link to all of them.
That's right. And most of this was covered in our January 14th issue, and there's a drop down for magazines, and you can look for that issue.
Yeah.
So, but the stories I think that we're looking at, and probably the one that's getting a lot of attention just in the last couple of weeks, I'd say, is something called FedRAMP. And this is an initiative started in part by federal CIO Vivek Kundra, but also with the help of a number of people surrounding the need to grease the skids for cloud computing. And one of the classic and real challenges has to do with getting security certification for a lot of new technologies. So if government wants to move to cloud computing, that is essentially by definition means they're either sharing facilities virtually, but also sharing software applications. But under current regulations, an agency that wants to install an application has to go through a rigorous certification and accreditation process.
Right.
Even if one agency gets it, another agency still has to go through the same process.
So it's
hugely duplicative.
FISMA-related?
And it's FISMA-related. And so the dilemma here is, how does government get into the business of true government-wide applications? And that's really where the economies of scale of cloud computing come in, and also the speed and agility to adapt. And I think those forces are what's driving FedRAMP. So FedRAMP essentially represents a program. It has a joint authorization board, and that board will essentially look at an application for how it's accredited. And it typically, if it's approved, the thought would be is if it's approved for one, it'll work for all.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a big sea change, and it's not easy because, by and large, agencies do have a lot of different missions to
sure.
accomplish. So trying to find the common denominator of minimum requirements is harder than many people would suspect. But at the same time, those minimums are increasingly set by NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and a lot of other bodies that are sort of saying, here are the minimum requirements everyone must meet.
Right. So if you set it across the board, you're eliminating 10, 15, 20% of the time it takes to do the rest.
Could be more and time. And more fundamentally, I think it really opens the gate to beginning the grand experiment of how do we use on-demand cloud computing services, which up to now is gets a lot of discussion, and we see it around us. But there's certainly some good examples of government agencies using cloud computing, but in pretty limited ways. GSA is using it. NASA is using it with their Nebula system where they're sharing research.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of other agencies have set up on-demand computing. But the ability to really share applications and speed up their deployment requires, in many cases, getting this kind of common certification. So FedRAMP is designed to try to do that, and essentially it's a risk assessment approach. So what this board would do would be look at the degree to which these applications and the agencies presenting them have been able to demonstrate they have the right risk controls in place, because we can't control all the security issues that are out there.
Sure.
So there'll be a joint authorization board. And by the way, that'll be made up of members of senior executives from the Department of Defense, Department of Homeland Security, GSA. And essentially, they're going to be looking at what's considered a moderate level of security. That means not only public-facing web material that generally is a low security issue, but a lot of the business-related data, not highly classified, but a lot of the bread-and-butter data that government used to run their business. So being at the moderate level of risk mm-hmm. is kind of the standard that they'll be looking for. And related to that is something going on in the acquisition side that GSA is working on. GSA had attempted to put together an RFP back in January to acquire infrastructure as a service over the cloud. So this is the ability to buy storage, the ability to buy processing power. They pulled the RFP in part because they realized that their language was not complete. The security requirements were not articulated as well as they needed to be. And they also, I think, needed to really find ways to get it done faster. So what they've done and what the plan is, according to Dave McClure, who works at GSA in the Office of Citizen Services and Communications, he's the assistant administrator there, he's articulated a plan working with Vivek Kundra that says companies that can provide cloud services need to be on the Schedule 70, which is a big schedule that allows people to essentially buy and provide computing services. So you have to be already a qualified vendor with a Schedule 70 contract. And the idea would be is that you'd propose your ability to do cloud services as sort of an appended way or an additional way.
Is this going to be a new sin?
I believe it will be, but I also think it's going to incorporate a lot of the current SIN language, and we'd have to jump into that. But here's what that will do. Number one, it'll provide an acquisition method that kind of fast-tracks the ability to do this.
Right.
At the same time that FedRAMP comes into the picture and says we can handle some of the certification. So what you're going to see probably on May 20th, in fact, is an event that Vivek Kundra and NIST are holding sort of a cloud summit where a lot of the details of FedRAMP will be discussed. This RFP from GSA that will permit infrastructure service purchasing, I don't think we'll be quite ready for that, but I know they're racing to get it done quickly. So I would say by May and June, you'll suddenly see a lot of the barriers to cloud computing and shared government-wide systems and services suddenly be a lot more in the clear than they've been before. There'll still be a lot of execution issues, a lot of questions, a lot of inertia that says we're not ready. But by and large, the major hurdles that have kept cloud computing kind of theoretical really are on the verge of happening. So I think that'll be one of the big stories that we'll be seeing and covering this year.
Well, it could give Schedule 70 a nice added bump in revenue as well. And Lord knows that the players who are going to be providing this are probably already there because there's 5,000 schedule holders on 70.
That's right. And I think, you know, a lot of these services can also be provided in ways that don't require new bidding. In many cases, there's new business models where you don't actually have to pay for these services because there's other ways of having them delivered.
Sure.
So it's a very inventive, fertile time to incorporate new technologies and certainly exciting for us to cover.
Cool. My guest today is Wyatt Cash. Wyatt is the editor-in-chief of Government Computer News and Defense Systems. You can find them through gcn.com. You can find all of the 1105 publications. Just click the drop-down button for our other publications,
right,
and they're there. You can find Defense Systems, Federal Computer Week, Government Computer News, WashTech. My personal favorite. I like Government Computer News too. But when we come back, we're going to be talking about how social media is being used in the government market. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower.
Nurse means noble. Nurse means selfless. Mothers nurse their children. You nurse someone back to health. If there were ever a group of people more on the give side of the give-take continuum, it would be news to us. I mean, why does one become a nurse? Because working 8 at night to 10 in the morning is so appealing? Because the glamour of day-to-day encounters with a wide variety of bodily fluids is too much to resist? Nurses are nurses because their capacity to care is colossal. Their sympathy, superhuman. Even when you try to act all steely and businesslike, you can't fool us. We still see the love in the tough. We can still hear that gargantuan heart all squishy with compassion thumping away. So while too often you yield the spotlight for just this moment, we're asking all the nurses out there to do what clearly doesn't come natural and take a bow. Kaiser Permanente, may our 45,000 nurses all live long and thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down the walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com. Keystone Rubber Corporation says, according to the Food and Drug Administration, drug abusers seldom live successful lives by their own standards or anyone else's. Over a period of time, they lose interest in school, jobs, and family. Help fight drug abuse through education. This message from Keystone Rubber Corporation in Greenbackville, Virginia. This area is a great place to live, work, shop, and raise families, and they're doing their part to keep it that way. That's Keystone Rubber Corporation, where they're always concerned with the safety and welfare of the community.
Hey, Natstown, make your dollar go further at Nationals Park. Get your riddle. Watch future Hall of Famer Pudge Rodriguez, All-Star Ryan Zimmerman, slugger Adam Dunn, and the Nats as they battle the Mets Wednesday and Thursday, May 19th and 20th. Don't miss the best happy hour in D.C. $5 Miller products at the Miller Lite Scoreboard Walk. Spend less, get more, go Nats. Visit Nationals.com or call 888-632-NATS. 888-632-NATS.
Are you trying to contact a key government decision maker and don't know where to start? Let Carol be your solution. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find people in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel by calling 703-757-8228. That's 703-757-8228. Carol Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Wyatt Cash, Editor-in-Chief of Government Computer News and Defense Systems. Wyatt, another of the big stories this year and evolving from last year and growing into next is the use of social media, the adoption of social media on multiple fronts.
Well, that's right, I think that really came into view this last week. The web content managers of the federal government all gathered in Washington to just look at strategies for improving government websites. And it was the big difference this year compared to last year, I think, was the degree to which a variety of social media and other collaboration tools have work their way onto the sites. It's no longer better search, better presentation, many of the issues of getting government information out to the public, but really a new period where we see tools that engage the public in a variety of ways. One of the examples there's a lot of health data, for example, and there's the ability to make that data available to the market has a lot of interesting applications. This is a little bit in the data.gov sphere, but we think of real estate services where schools and how well they do dictate or determine the value of properties. So what we're seeing now are new tools, social media being an enabler, that might take healthcare data in a particular region. How many hospitals does it have? What's the level of cancer incidences in a market? Mm-hmm. And actually impute that data into a geographic map that says, in addition to school scores, here's how healthy a community it is. So what we're seeing here is not just, okay, we have a Facebook site and we have our stuff up on YouTube, which is exciting, and we're seeing a lot of great examples of that, but a deeper ability to take government information and make it available to businesses and the public, and in many cases let the public figure out how to use it. So this is a somewhat of an outgrowth of the effort to get more data transparent and available to the public.
Okay, the more of the service to the citizen kind of model. We see it rolling out through agencies like the Veterans Administration. National Cancer Institute has a variety of Twitterers, I guess, yeah, providing data, as does NASA. NASA, last time I looked, NASA had like 50, 60, 70,000 followers, and this was just space junkies kind of following.
Well, and it's amazing how many of us non-space junkies get sucked into it because it's available, it's there, and there's an easy way to get it on our mobile device.
And it's pretty cool.
Which I think is the other thing that's really defining what's happening in the market is smartphones and the ability to get information in your handheld is going to dramatically accelerate a lot of these kinds of social media services for the government. One report out now suggests that there'll be more information downloaded to people's mobile devices than on the desktop, and the purchasing of mobile devices that are smartphone-enabled will continue to mean that the majority of the way we get our information moves from a big monitor into a 3-by-4-inch screen. And that presents a lot of challenges. How do you make that information bite-sized enough, consumable enough, and interactive enough? And
right.
I think that's one of the things that the government and a lot of those web content managers are starting to wrestle with now.
Yeah, and I'm not god-awful fond of watching things on a 2-by-3 screen anyway, but that's just me. Let's talk a little bit not about how the government is using this stuff per se, but how is GCN adapting to this? Because you've been blogging for a while. I don't know if you tweet, but I suspect you do.
That's right. Well, we were one of the very first business publications in the United States to actually move our web content onto a mobile device. When I took over as editor, did some quick surveys of what our readers do and how they consume information, it was obvious how many folks were still getting emails over their BlackBerry.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking that if that's where they're reading a lot of things, then we need to move there. So we were successful in doing that. Of course, the market's really, it seems like everybody's doing it now.
Sure.
And we're moving to new levels.
Well, you were also the first publication I knew of to make your content available in an audio format.
That's right. That was an interesting experiment. Yeah. And it is a little bit like those voice commands that you have. And it wasn't exactly the perfect experience to consume it.
No, but
this is all part of that learning process,
right,
and part of the innovation.
It was still cool that you did it.
We had a lot of fun with it. But since then, we've embraced primarily Twitter and Facebook as ways to communicate to our audiences. I think we're still learning, like many people, that the folks that are following us on Twitter aren't necessarily our traditional readers. I'd say they're more of the public relations and the blogosphere that's trying to pick up what we're covering.
Right.
So, and to some degree,
which is okay.
Well, I think we're moving to a period where there's an increasing echo chamber taking place, though.
Right.
And I think that becomes challenging for the media. It becomes challenging for readers. Think about how many people retweet a retweet.
Yeah.
So the trick, I think, is to how do we continue to project, here's original reporting, here's the value of that reporting in this increasingly noisy environment.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I enjoy the primary sources. I've couple of desktops that I work at from my home office. One of them opens at Wash Tech, because that's key for me understanding what the integrator community
sure
is doing. And I get the newsletters from just about all of the 1105 pubs and a bunch of others. It's a primary source for me. And will I blog about it? Sure. Will I tweet it? Occasionally. If I bother to tweet. Not a primary concern for me because, again, I don't see the people that I want to communicate with on Twitter.
Right.
Not yet.
I think the key advantage is the ability to alert people to developments before we've had full time to research a story.
Mm-hmm.
But we take care as well to make sure we've tried to check out what's happening, even if we don't have all the details. And that's one of the big dilemmas is, there's a lot of hearsay that shows up in Twitters that you really can't tell the difference. Is this real Or is it somebody's, regurgitated?
Is it live? Is it Memorex? Is it an edited?
And it's hard to make that clear when you're looking at a little device streaming, with five messages a second.
Right. And again, not my preferred method of communication. Any final thoughts here?
Well, yeah, I think, there's a whole other area, maybe for another time, but what's taking place in the defense sector, the Army, for example, trying to develop an Army-wide email system so that wherever you are in the world, you have one account to access your information, and not just your email, but your documents, your work, all the things that you need on the battlefield is a big development that's taking place. We'd like to think the Army would have had that by now. And they do have Army Knowledge Online, which lets a lot of soldiers and vets and their families communicate, but the amount of information on that is certainly more restricted. But they have over 2 million users, and so this is a newer, more robust effort to essentially have warfighters with sort of one access point wherever they are in the world to the network to get their information. And that's going to take a while to develop, but certainly an area that we're following as well.
It's going to be hot, and you can follow that and the other stories at gcn.com. Wyatt, it's been a blast,
hey,
man.
Sorry we took so long to do this. So thanks very much for having me.
We'll do it again soon. You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest has been Wyatt Cash, Editor-in-Chief of Government Computer News and Defense System Magazines. Two pubs, too. He's got two jobs.
Like all of us these days.
Yeah, really. this is not my day job. If you're one of the few who wish to excel in marketing to the government, join me and my extraordinary advisors at governmentmarketmaster.com. And remember, you have not been everywhere until you've been off-center with AmTower.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
A number of journalists will no longer be able to go into the military commissions at Guantanamo Bay. The Pentagon says four of them published the name of a witness after being told not to. The military wanted the witness identified only as interrogator number one and said that reporting his name was off limits. Reporters for the Miami Herald, Toronto Star, Globe and Mail, and CanWest News Service are the organizations affected. I'm J.J. Green.
When you're flying somewhere, you ever think about the amount of information that is needed to get you to your destination? Airink does every day. Airink enables airlines to send and receive vitally important operational information. So the next time you hear the flight crew advise that you'll be landing in 20 minutes, you're 30 miles from the airport. You'll be arriving at gate B26, and the weather is fine. Remember, this information travels to you over one of the world's largest private networks, Airink's. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
It was such a surreal experience to be getting ready for class and then a few hours later being diagnosed with cancer. It's just unbelievable. I was told I had 2.5 years to live.
When John Ivey was diagnosed with cancer, he couldn't afford the medicine he needed.
When it came down to money, it's very devastating. And here's a new drug that's potentially life-saving. And then all of a sudden to be told, you can't afford it, you can't have it. I was dying, and I wanted to live.
John contacted Novartis about the medicine he needed.
They told us to just forget about the money portion of it. They basically eliminated that part of the equation and said, let's just get you well. If it wasn't for people like that, people like me wouldn't be here.
Developing new medicines, getting them to the patients who need them. Novartis. Think what's possible.
What will happen to your hard-earned wealth after you die? How do you protect your assets for your family? Will your heirs squander it away? Will creditors and predators try to take it away from your loved ones? At Zelle Law, our goal is to give you peace of mind in planning for your retirement and beyond, by helping you construct the best life and estate plans customized to your needs. Find out what you need to know on Blueprint for Wealth. Join me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 10 a.m. right here on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio.
IT professionals and graduates from around the country have a lot to say about their experiences from the online Masters in Information Systems from UMBC, the University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
My current title is Chief of Technology. That was one of the things that I was actually looking for, was to have chief or officer within my position title.
Apply today for our upcoming semester. For more information, call 1-800-353-UMBC or visit us online at onlinems.umbc.edu.
WFED Washington.